Accession number 4686, room number 4.
Mr. Iveson, tape 4. Mr. Iveson, before we go on to your tribunal proper, you've mentioned the Quakers and the Jehovah's Witnesses. Did you have any dealings with the communist anti-war movement at all?
Well, the communists went anti-war.
They were at the one time, weren't they?
For a short time, but not long enough to get in contact. What happened was, when the war broke out, Harry Pollitt, leader of the Communist Party, had written a pamphlet, How to Win the War. And the ink wasn't dry in its papers before they took it out, and they were against the war. And Harry Pollitt came to Nelson that particular weekend, as he'd been sacked, and I had supper with him in an ILP's house, because we had an ILP CO living in this house, and his sister was a communist. And I got invited to supper with Harry Pollitt. And Harry Pollitt claimed he had toothache. I said, well, you've got to have something where you talk tonight. You do tongue in your cheek. He was using the same words as Maxton and the government used in 38. That was, it was a breathing space. It was a breathing space in which to marshal your forces to avert war. Was when the appeasement of Chamberlain in 38. They welcomed it, did the ILP, did, through Maxton. Fenebrockway opposed it. But the communists were taking the same line. Well, so many things was happening, and then all of a sudden there was, you see, Ribbentrop and the Soviet Union had made a pact, sealed by blood, as they said in the time. And we were able to twit the communists on the changeover. They could change round so rapidly. Then there was Hitler, for some reason best known to himself, it didn't appear to anyone else really know, he changed his direction and attacked the Soviet Union. Well, of course, they're on the side of the Allies. I remember it well. I was in Liverpool at the time doing blitz work. And our union national chairman took me to a conference in Picton Hall, and there was Citrine there. He'd just written a book on my Finnish diary, where he called them vile despots, masquerading under the name of socialists. This was the communists, the Russian people. And that meeting, he's coming forward with his arms outstretched with four individuals, the equivalent of the oil workers' secretary, the mine workers' and all. Give 3 cheers for our gallant comrades. They'd come in on the side of the Allies. Well, once it got in the side of the Allies, and then later on, the ban on the daily worker was lifted. They was calling for greater efforts for this and greater efforts for that. They opposed every strike. They were opposing the strikes in the shipyards and the miners, where thousands of miners were out on strike. Couldn't possibly be wrong, in our opinion. But they were opposed to it, and they became the position of strike breakers. They wouldn't claim that, they wouldn't admit that now, but they did. And then they started to open second fronts. They wanted a second front, and from every seaside front in Britain, they was clamouring for a second front to be opened, especially from conferences and so on. And we used to twit them, but it was much safer from Blackpool Front or Scarborough Front to ask a second front. Fortunately, or unfortunately for them, the audiences got wise to this, and when the lads, the communist organisers, were asking for second fronts, they said, why are you not there? So what they did, they pushed in a lot of women as organisers, as ghost organisers, and they were in the background. This actually happened, Abbots and so on.
Was there at any stage when, you know, the ILP and the communists worked together?
Aye, but it was not long before the war. The United Front for a short time.
Mm. What stage would that have been?
Oh, the date I wouldn't like to say. There was the United Front, where we was with the communists, and then there was the Unity Campaign, with Stafford Cripps from the Socialist League, Maxton from the ILP, Pollitt from the Communists, and Dick Mellor He'd be the Socialist League. And the opening meeting was in the Free Trade Hall at Manchester, because they had three meetings. They had two overflow meetings. I were at the main one. And £300 odd was collected, which was a fortune in those days. Today, £300 is like a fellow with a weekend overtime can get nearly that. But it was a fortune with £300 odd. Where collections used to be 25 shilling, a good one, this was £300 odd.
And were your aims the same at that time?
At that time, it was a common effort. But it didn't last long. Dick Mellon and Irene Bevan and those backed down because they were threats of expulsion. And the Communist Party seized the signatures, hoping to use them, you know, for their own purpose. So the war came along. There was trouble during the 1936 war in Spain, because they had trouble with the PUM, which was the Spanish ILP, and Bob claims he was shot with a fascist bullet. I don't know whether that was true or not. He claimed so. I've heard it questioned, but Bob said he was shot. And the communists were strutting up and down in uniforms, the thing which the PUM and the ILP was against. Like, it was a... It wasn't the old type of army and war. It was a struggle for socialism. Whether it was a good one or a bad one, we'll let that go. But the communists came out a bit bad, and have done since, because Russia was playing a funny game. I'm not anti-Russian. I'm anti-stupidity and violence. Well, wherever it springs up from, whether it's in the ILP or it's in the Communist Party or anywhere. Mm.
Talking of the Spanish Civil War, did that influence you at all?
I was tempted. Finance stopped me completely. You see, 1936 was shortly after the 30th, the big cuts in unemployment. My mother and father were unemployed, and I was an apprentice up to 1933. And then when I came out of my time in 33, I hadn't a full week's wage. I worked a full week, but never had a full week's wage for months and months, because you made up on the... Can you understand that? You made up on the Thursday. So, in a week's work, you had 4 days to come, and a day and a half for the following week. So when you got going, week about, you had... I was still better off than most lads in the town. I had 4 days and 3 days unemployment. The same applied at the Dole. You only got 3 days, and then you dig off. And the other week would be a day and a half plumbing, you know. 3 days Dole, and 7 and 6 plumbers union, less sixpence to keep, 7 shillings to keep you in benefit with sixpence, you see. And there were three of us, mother and dad and me, and there was no income going in if I went. And Ivy and I weren't married, but we discussed it a long while. And I was this way about going to Spain.
What tempted you to go to Spain, you know, with your pacifist beliefs? Why did you feel you perhaps ought to go?
I felt there was a genuine attempt there to get a socialist government.
And you would have been prepared to fight?
I don't know if I would have gone there, or whether it would have been on medical grounds. And I know nothing about medical grounds, you know, and what medical services I could possibly have helped. And I've come to... We were talking last night with Jenny Morell, that if something happened now with a socialist government, what would we do? Well, I've discussed this with Dan Carradine many years ago, and he says, well, I don't know how we would stand out. It'd have to be something medical, if we could help in any way, like on medical grounds. We did go around collecting, you know, for doing that 36 period, door-to-door collections in Knowles, and got big sums of money for those times, and they were for medical supplies, and we did that. I didn't go since. I think it's turned out right, because It seems to happen so many times, and in these so-called revolutionary struggles for something better, when the victory's been achieved, they don't seem to be able to shut it off with a complete start. What was the enemy's been banished, but any opposition afterwards seems to become the enemy again, and the same methods is used to silence them. And we saw that so much with the number that was put to death in Russia with those numbers that were killed, you know. And
in the purges of the 30s, yes.
And those people, to me, couldn't possibly... Maybe I'm an idealistic, I don't know, but in being an idealist, I suppose you've got to think the best. But I couldn't see every one of those going wrong. Yes, Jimmy Thomas here, and the Philip Snowdens and so on. But the Jimmy Thomases weren't all bad. I know that he mortgaged his house to fight a by-election. I can't see many of people doing that today to do it. So I didn't just... I think perhaps it were better, and now I don't think I'd have any difficulty at all. If I was going to do anything in that struggle...
Did you have any thoughts against fascism with that war?
Oh, yes, always against fascism, because fascism... Well, I mean, as they used to say, if they'd have come into Nelson, I'd have been one of the first to be put inside. They didn't put the ordinary bloke inside, who never had an opinion on anything, who just happened goes and votes. This time he votes Labour, he thinks he's going to do most for his particular job. Next year, next election, he votes Tory because he thinks they'll do most. He never gets into trouble with fascism or anything else. But where we'd been demonstrating for this and against fascism and collecting and all that, the first ones to go is the militant trade unionists and the militant socialists. Well, I think it would be safe to say I were considered a militant in Nelson. I'm not calling myself one. They call me that. I don't think it's militant to just be, to demand what's right. I think it's good common sense. But they called it militancy, didn't they?
Were you aware of the nature of fascism? You know, what Hitler was doing?
Where we could see what was happening, and where we could see in Germany where Thälmann and all those have been put down and put in prison and so on, and the Jews. Though we didn't know to the extent, but we knew things was happening.
But how did you think that you could cope with Hitler by not fighting? You know, how did you think that he could be coped with and stopped?
We took the view that you appealed over the heads of the state to overthrow it. And after all, the only ones that can overthrow a regime is somebody with inside that country. And we weren't. What you do in fighting it is often bind and break any opposition to it in a concerted effort to beat the attacker. Because their powers of propaganda are equal to ours. And if you started to attack fascism from another country, you were attacking the nation. And they aren't all like me, unfortunately, from my point of view. They united together against the oppressor. And furthermore, having known, and many of them still alive, the people of the oppressions after the First World War, of the blockade, knew that the British and the Allies could be equally ruthless as any Hitler or Mussolini. And it wasn't so much Hitler uniting them, I don't think so, as the things that had happened before in starving the population with the blockades that unites them. You see, the Communist Party, or the Bolshevik Party, the under Communist Party, the Bolshevik Party, didn't start the revolution. It was starvation and hunger, wasn't it? Short of food, clothing and ammunition. So they revolted with the feet and they came home. I admitted someone organised it afterwards, when the Trotskys and the Lenins came back, because they were out of the country. Well, it was conditions that did it, wasn't it? And conditions unite a country, don't they? You see, when you have a war, you appeal to the finest instincts in an individual to to do the foulest things, don't you? You're being attacked, and your grandmother came into it a lot during the war. Somebody were always attacking your grandmother. God knows where all the grandmothers came from. I had the answer for that many when I went to the tribunal. What would you do if your grandmother were attacked? Well, of course, you know full well, pacifist and all pacifist, you won't let anybody attack an old woman without having some sort of an effort to stop them somehow. Well, that's in appealing to your finest instincts. You weren't attacking, you weren't saving somebody's grandmother. This was what they said might happen. So then they get you to go and kill somebody's grandmother, somebody's mother, or somebody's grandchild, or son and daughter. It didn't matter who it was, so long as somebody were getting killed. And you'd, in arousing his finest instincts, you'd got him to do the foulest things. Because basically most people are decent. You don't know a real bad one, do you? Nobody, I'm not saying there isn't, but for everyone bad, and there's thousands and thousands of decent, kindly folk, isn't there? Which proves it. By now, if there was an accident across there, this would go sky high and we'd run straight out. Whether we'd be at road, I don't know. Whether we'd be of any use or hindrance. But we'd go across. Not just out of curiosity, see if we could do something. But we'd have a job to get there, because some that's out there would be there first. And when there's a big disaster, it isn't getting the numbers to go down. It's cutting the numbers out to get a reasonable number down that can work. When a ship's in distress, everybody answers it in the area. So basically people's good.
But realising what was happening with Germany in the 30s, yeah, and Hitler's sort of expansive ideas, how did you expect to stop or cope with that without fighting against it?
Well,
did you have any sort of blueprint for appealing to the German
people? Yes, we said you had to appeal over and above. Now, there's many ways of which one can do it. There was many ways which one could have opposed a Rhodesia business. In fact, Rhodesia was an easy one. Because money was made here, and you could have dropped money behind. Now, that was being done in various places, wasn't it? Where you ruined, where there was an attempt to ruin the economy by dropping money, and so on. Well, there was many ways of which he could have been destroyed. But it's never the right thing to ask someone of anti-war views, in the midst of a struggle, what would you do now? You should have asked that. I'm not speaking personally, I'm generalising. You should have asked that before it started. Because 1939-45 war did not start in 39. It was a continuation after a rest period of the 14-18 war. And when we, or my people, with the views that I hold, were objecting to the blockade, was objecting to sending troops into the Soviet Union, was helping with the Soviet famine, was helping with the inflationary period, or trying to do, that was the basis of forming and cementing a friendship that would never have allowed Hitler to come to power. So therefore, to come in at the tail end and say, what would you do, isn't just a fair thing. Give us a job right from the beginning.
Yeah, well, you've answered my question. That's when you start.
Yes.
That's when you... And you would have continued.
Right on.
Mm. But what went wrong? What, you know, you were doing all those things
that
you've
said.
Well,
we weren't big enough, was we? We just wasn't big enough.
You think that was it? You didn't
have the
support?
We just wasn't big enough. Mm. I mean, so many things have gone wrong. The general strike went wrong. It wasn't for the sake of... It isn't for those that do that it goes wrong. It's for those that don't. I mean, the reason any party's small is not by the number that's in it. It's by the numbers that's out, isn't it? So, they can hardly criticise the ones that were doing it, that it failed, if they didn't play the part. And now, we should be fostering friendships wherever we possibly can. I've no time for Russia going into Afghanistan. They followed Britain, haven't they? They went in twice before. But that doesn't make it right. But the one that lived in glass houses, they said, or let the one without sin cast the first stone, the religious one could say, couldn't he? We haven't much to quarrel with people over for some of the things that's happening. And if we were a bit more alert, the trade unions and the labour movement, even on this European business that we were talking about privately, if we was fostering friendships between nations of our own people, the socialist movement and the trade union movements going together, then the others can't start. They can't start the war. We're too big. But they offer so many plums.
How do you think the trade unions performed, you know, regarding the attitude to war?
I always took a critical view, insofar that this is what happened, and no trade union leader could deny it, was to make a bullet by trade union labour was correct. Their complaint was when they were making bullets or armaments with non-union labour, that they objected. But to the fellow who's getting shot, it doesn't matter a great deal whether it has a trade union stamp on or it hasn't. It's just as disastrous to the fellow who gets shot. And unfortunately, and this is where my argument comes in with the left, and I've argued this with past MP, who defeated last time, I claim that if there was armaments industry in Nelson, and they were having redundancies, like we are having in some of the other industries, he would be attempting to stop that, of which we should be putting flags up, that workers were being made redundant in armaments, like we should be putting flags up that miners were being made redundant, if only we were catering for them in a proper way, with shorter hours and so on. But the left would be equal as anyone else in trying to keep an armament industry going in a certain area. I mean, I listened to a bloke from some Mike Thomas from North East, Newcastle, I think. He said that the Labour Party was a great humanitarians. When they were in power prior to the government, you know, Tories being returned, they brought forward a programme of missile carriers in order to keep the mountains employed. Well, if that ain't guns before butter and stuff, like it were in Hitler's place, I don't know. If the only way Labour can solve an unemployment problem or meet that situation is we're hurrying forward an armaments programme, then I'm not for it. And I've no more time for the Labour Party's programme than I have for Tory, if it's on that basis. It's no comfort to me to know you're going to be shot with a Labour man. It was any easier to sleep on a bed than with a Tory magistrate as against a Labour magistrate, or vice versa.
Well, I think we must get down to magistrates now, and I must ask you about your tribunal. First of all, when did you register as a CO? You've mentioned that when war was declared, you had these meetings of the ILP and the Quaker meeting as well, and the crowd that turned up. Did you register immediately?
Well, you registered on your age.
Yes. When did that crop up for you?
1939, how old was I? That's 1912.
27.
I would be, or something like that. Mm. Well, there was earlier ages than that being registered. Then I registered, but plumbers were reserved for a time, and they didn't bother, though you registered as a continuous objector. I went to Liverpool working on Blitz work, voluntarily. How that came about was, I'd heard of some fellas working till they were dropping, and I offered to go with waterboard, and then I got this, and I went. And we went 6 o'clock at morning, travelling from Nelson 63 miles, and come back at 6 o'clock at night. And we were doing first aid repairs. If you lived in London, you'd know it that way, you know, putting felt over window frames and so on and so forth. Well, after a time, after 12 months, 11 months of both travelling and living there, I'd got a group of COs working there under me as a charge hand. I got about six from Nelson, five or six. And there was a bit of a disturbance, and I packed in.
What was the disturbance?
Well, the disturbance wasn't the original one, like where they were taking exception to these COs. I said they had better jobs than others. I think you could put them on it. One was a shuttle maker, well, he was a craftsman, but not on the building trades craftsman. We were used to using tools. One was an engineer, again, used to using tools and measuring. And I had these lads doing first aid repairs, because we were doing all sorts. I was a plumber, but I'm making window frames and slating, because you basically know the setups of these things. And they were going to have trouble, not against me, but against these.
Against the six COs?
Yes, but not me. They accepted me as being one, as being there. There's no accounting for certain reasonings, is there? And that were one. They were against them, but not me.
Had these been before tribunals?
Oh, yes.
These COs? Yes,
yes,
and you hadn't at that stage?
No. I think I might have been. I'm not sure. I went before one and they sent me back, because it was Judge Burgess again who sent me back. You see, I took a phrase like this, that I wasn't asking for total exemption. I'd already got it, for I'd decided, whatever decision of that court were, I weren't going. When I said that, he twisted it and said, you've got an exemption by your job, go away and come back when we send for you again. And he old-headed me a bit there, but I was using that as I've just told you now, which I did do later on. Now, they were going, he says, I'll have to sack these lads. I said, well, I've enough friends on here to counter strike against the others. Now you can please yourself, what are you going to do? Take them along. He said, leave it with me. And he sorted it out, and they stopped. Well, they started to drift away for one reason or another, and then I'd got to this feeling that I'd said so much about generals leading from behind, and here were I, sort of a leader at local ILP. Most of the others had been called up before to go into and go to jail, and I hadn't. Now, whether I thought I were missing something or whether I did think it was wrong for me to have encouraged people to go, and I was still out because they hadn't the safety of a trade as I had. So I packed in and put myself on the labour exchange. Well, once you came from first aid repairs, you put yourself in the hands of the labour exchange. You couldn't go and pick a job anywhere. You could only go where they sent you. Well, they wanted to send me several places and I wouldn't go. Well, that's when they sent for you a bit to tribunal. And I went before the tribunal for the second time. And that was at Blackman, was it, or Preston? There'd some been at Lancaster. I think it was Preston I went. And Judge Burgess was on. Well, I don't know, you know, the setup of a tribunal. There was always a trade union representative.
I'd really like you to describe it as fully as you possibly can.
Well, you had your judge for the local tribunal, what they call the local tribunals. There was a trade union representative who happened to be one at textile workers, I think, called Roberts. Then there's one from the employers, and there can be one from a church or something like that. Those aren't usually the best. And you're allowed to stay. You've sent in your paper, why you wish to be. You're registered as a CO. You fill in a paper why you are.
Your statement?
Yes.
Can you remember what you said on yours? Approximately.
Well, only that it was a capitalist war. And so I'm work around that. And when I went, I wanted to speak. I've always wanted to speak, as you noted. And they said, read that statement. I said, but can I not make a statement? They said, yes, read that and then make your statement. So I had to read this out. So I read it out and then got going. Because, as you said, you didn't like this fellow who come reading his out. I didn't like reading mine out. And I went forward on it, and I said, I always remember saying this, duty above Edwards. I said, the position that I'm taking up this morning is not unusual and nothing new. Herbert Morrison took this similar position in the last war. And I believe you, Mr. Roberts, took up a similar position. Now, Roberts and Judge Burgess had had a bit of a clash in the morning over somebody else's. And I was in listening as a, you know, waiting for my turn. And I saw a smile come, he was very poker faced with Judge Burgess, a smile came, just a trace of a smile. And he shot at me, he did this, Roberts, and said it wasn't true. So I said, in that case, if I've said anything that's wrong, I'll withdraw it. And Burgess says, the applicant, oh, he's a dry fella, the applicant has no need to withdraw anything.